so that slavery and anti-black racism. He said a lot of good things, and I wanted to play that so that we don't look at these incidences of police brutality as being something isolated, but that we really know that it's tied to a larger culture of racism, anti-black racism, white supremacy, and colonialism, imperialist histories, all of those kind of things. So I have invited Indaysha Jewakali to join us on the phone so that he could put it, he could help us put some of this police brutality into a New Orleans context and a historical context. Thank you for joining us, Indaysha. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
Of course. I'm always interested in your insight into situations like this. Can you, let's start with the non-indictment. What do you think about that happening?
Well, I think that from the standpoint of having a law degree and having practiced criminal law for a couple of decades, I think the whole system of the grand jury was corrupted and perverted by the DA. I mean, everybody knows, and it's been said many times, that a DA can indict a ham sandwich if he has the will to do it. The point of the matter is, this DA never intended to indict Officer Wilson. In fact, this DA should have recused himself because he's got too much personal baggage involved in the St. Louis Area Police Department. Since his father was a policeman that was killed by a black person in the project, which changed his view of black people, his whole family worked for the police department. And in fact, he intended to be a policeman until he had an injury that caused him to have a bad leg. In the case of a grand jury, the prosecutor represents the victim, and he presents the case in the best light of the victim, and then that only allows the grand jury to say, hey, there's enough here to go to trial. You don't convict a person in a grand jury. But the prosecutor is supposed to present his case in the best light toward the victim. And in this case, it was pretty obvious the prosecutor was not representing the victim. The prosecutor was representing the police department.
Didn't the prosecutor not even present charges? Wasn't it like, hey, you decide what to charge him with, if anything at all?
Well, no. I mean, let me say this. That's not the grand jury's role. The grand jury is supposed to listen to the prosecutor's case. The prosecutor is supposed to put on the case in the best interest of the victim and then recommend what the grand jury should do, which is almost 100% that they should indict.
But wait, wasn't there something different in this case, though? Because I think I read somewhere that it was saying that, because I've heard all this stuff that you're talking about as far as the lack of fortitude or the lack of whatever on the part of the DA in really going after and doing presenting this case the ways in which usually cases are presented. But I do remember reading about saying that he didn't present a charge, you know.
No, he didn't recommend a charge, and he brought in both the state and the defense witnesses to testify before the grand jury and gave Darren Wilson 4 hours to give a speech and represent himself with nobody cross-examining him and nobody telling the other side of the story. So you basically had Darren Wilson with a four-hour opportunity to make the grand jurors see the case from his perspective. And that is unheard of. I mean, that is completely unheard of. I've never heard that. And as much as I disagree with Nancy Grace, even Nancy Grace on Headline News said that the whole process was totally incorrect from the standpoint of having a legal mind.
How often do police officers, and from what you have experienced and witnessed, how often do police officers even make it to being to a grand jury?
Well, I think that
when they kill black people, let's leave it in the realm. Well, when they kill black people, unarmed.
I think it might be worse when they kill unarmed black people. But I think even anybody that is illegally harmed by the police department has a very uphill battle, because the state is the DA and the police department, and they both work together, and the most DAs work every day with the police department, and they feel an obligation to be on the side of the police department. So it's difficult all the time. But in this case, this DA just about made it impossible.
Mm. Right. So
there's difficulty all the time in getting one aspect of state power to condemn or prosecute another partner in state power, because together they basically have a role of enforcing state power and keeping everybody in check. Mm. So they're not going to very often turn on each other.
Right, right. Especially not in a case like this, where we see the DA was very much entrenched. It's a smaller town, of course, just like even if you are in a bigger city like New Orleans, a lot of people know each other. And like you said, he comes from a family of cops, wanted to be a cop himself until his leg was amputated. And his father was murdered by a black man. It's funny you say that he should recuse himself for that alone, because it would provide some prejudice against black people. But that made me think, well, then shouldn't all white people recuse themselves from juries and from being judges when in cases involving black people? Under that logic, I wouldn't necessarily say no.
Well, let me say this. That has been a point of, I remember back in the early 70s, the National Conference of Black Lawyers felt that if, in fact, a black person went before a majority white jury and a majority white judge and with a white DA, that it violated the constitutional right to a jury of your peers. Of course, that is an argument that every time a black person goes before the U.S. justice system, that you are basically looking at a Dred Scott situation when the Supreme Court said that a black man has no right that a white person has to honor. So there's arguments that, hey, we never get a fair trial. But, I mean, in this case, you're going way, way to the other end, where not only did Mike Brown not get represented, that it was made impossible to do anything but find no charge against the police department.
Mm. So looking at New Orleans as a place where that has suffered tremendously at the hands of the police, we just recently, it came out in the news about how the lack of attention to sexual assault cases and rape cases, and how they're kind of basically written down on a napkin and then thrown in a file somewhere or something like that. So why do you think that we haven't risen up here in New Orleans the ways in which, like, hey, you saw New York City blocked three bridges two nights ago. Why do you think we haven't seen that kind of outpour here in New Orleans, considering we're a city that experiences such police and state violence?
Well, I think there was a period in New Orleans in the 70s and 80s where you had a very strong contingent of community activists that were actually based in the community, and we used to do quite a bit of protesting around police brutality and police abuse. I think what happens now is everybody's accepting the whole concept that the purpose of New Orleans is to have a party. And you have people out here who says that they are actually activists, But the movement is right now controlled primarily by the nonprofit industrial complex. And I don't think these people understand the whole concept of being tied into the community and being able to go in your neighborhood and knock on doors and call people up, and they're not grounded in a manner that allows them to get any people out in the street, along with the serious Katrina PTSD thing where New Orleans, a lot of poor New Orleanians have been excluded from the city. A lot of them got so beat up trying to save their houses and save their total survival that they're kind of beaten down and feel a sense of hopelessness. And the concept that New Orleans go from one party to the other, and their distraction has been the norm in New Orleans. We don't go out and have fun for a distraction. It's been so since Katrina that the New Orleans culture is just to have fun. I think what we see since 205 versus what we saw before 205, when you had huge places like public housing where people could go in and talk to people, and you had people who felt that outrage and people that felt they could make a difference. There's just another culture in New Orleans that has came about over the last 9 years that makes it very difficult to put people in the street. Mm. I mean, you basically organizes these nonprofit foundation organizers organize each other. They don't go into the neighborhood and organize the people. And I think that makes it very difficult. There's no people bottom up base to go through and say, hey, this is really, really bad. I need you to come out and do something. That doesn't exist right now. And it needs to exist.
Right. I'm glad that you brought up the nonprofits, because one thing that I was thinking about as, you know, checking emails, and I'm like, look at the opportunism of nonprofits pouncing on another, you know, black body, using this as that opportunity to make some money, to say about how they're in the struggle too. I work for a nonprofit that specifically does things around these issues, but we're based here in New Orleans, and I don't want to make it seem like we're not focusing on what we're focusing on, because we're focusing on something that's happening somewhere else. So I've really kind of remained quieter probably than I should have about this event from my professional standpoint, because I'm concerned about what's happening here in New Orleans. Not that I'm not concerned about what's happening everywhere else, but I don't want to obfuscate the point that this is a serious issue here.
Well, absolutely. It's a serious issue here. And if you compare the bodies in New Orleans versus the bodies almost anywhere else that were cold-bloodedly murdered by the police department, we got to be in the top five in regards to if you do a 20-year study of that. But I think that the reason why you have to look at these national things, because there's a narrative that has to be looked upon with both Trayvon Martin and Darren Wilson, is that there is this situation now that if you feel threatened by a black person, you can kill them and get away with it. I mean, both Zimmerman and Wilson both initiated the contact. They initiated the contact. Darren Wilson initiated the contact with Mike Brown. He was the one that started it. And when he could not get the better of Brown, even though Brown only had one arm, then he went into threatened mode and executed him. Same thing with Zimmerman. Zimmerman went behind Trayvon Martin and caused the altercation to occur. But even though Trayvon Martin was still unarmed, he felt threatened enough to pull out a gun and shoot him, and there's now a precedent that's legal. You can go start an altercation with someone. When they start getting the best of you, pull out your gun and shoot them because you felt threatened, especially if the person is a black person. I mean, Darren Wilson is talking about how big and strong and all of this foolishness that Mike Brown is. The reality is Darren Wilson is 6'4", just like Mike Brown. They both were 6'4", but what this "I can pull out my gun and shoot you" concept allows cowards and bullies to start altercations, and then if they can't get the best of the person, use the gun to kill them and say, "Well, I felt threat." I mean, that is really scary all over the world.
Right. And we do know that the police are basically state-sanctioned bullies, so they walk around and don't treat really anybody with respect, yet demand it in this way where you are subject to violence if you don't cow to them. So,
one last statement, going back to the thing you were talking about with slavery,
uh-huh.
It was policy that if a slave put his hands on the master, he would be killed immediately and he would be put on public display to let all the other slaves know that you don't ever put your hands on the master. I think what we saw in Ferguson was a replay of that in regards to them telling Ferguson people, don't you ever defend yourself against the police department. If you do, you're going to die, and we're going to let you lay in the street for four hours and bake in the sun. I think that was just a replay of the slave master fear initiative that has been with us since the first Africans set foot on North American soil.
Right. So do you it almost sounds like I hear you saying that, like, this is the continuation, this is the trajectory of that history. Oh no, that's someone in the background. I thought that was you talking. I have a question about, so do you think though that things have changed at all? What is different? What feels different about this, showcase or this, I don't know what exactly the word is for calling kind of what you just said about leaving lynched bodies and, things like that for display for folks. I don't know what kind of show that you would call that, but this is the neo version of that, right? Because we have the ways in which the media works and stuff. So I don't know exactly what the question is here, but what is the difference of how have we seen that change over time? This message to Black people. So we see in the history from slavery, even through the 50s, 60s, and 70s of this lynching history, where if Black people, they would immediately be lynched mob, you know, have a mob chase them down for whatever ridiculous accusations white people could come up with, strung up by trees. There'd be barbecues and whatever going around. You can find pictures and see smiling children with, you know, Black bodies hanging in the background. Nobody, of course, ever went to, there was no trials or crime. In fact, a lot of these lynchings happened by the police and were sanctioned by the police. And judges were KKK members. Things like this happened. So,
so you basically saying there's not much of a difference.
Right.
I mean, you're kind of asking y'all a question because there's not much of a difference. I mean, they're doing the same thing now that they were doing 100 years ago. And most of the time, when this stuff was done, it was done sanctioned by the state, and law enforcement definitely were part of the Ku Klux Klan. I think you got all these white guys go through police because you get the opportunity to verbally, physically abuse Black men that you hate, and if you're lucky, you get a chance to kill one. And if you kill one, you might get right now $750,000 in a bonus that Aaron Wilson has. I don't see nothing that's changed.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hate to leave us all on that note, but we do only have a few minutes, and I have to read some announcements and stuff. So give us with some kind of – oh, you know what? I want you to promote. Is it okay to talk about the No Cops Collective?
I think the No Cops Collective is a good start to where we can start to have an independent community-based non-state controlled group to redress the police problem. It's not going to solve the problem, but it will educate people, to begin to build that base.
Hey, you started talking about it like people already know what it is. I need you to explain it a little bit for folks. What is the No Cops Collective?
Well, the No Cops Collective is a group of young people who are basically coming together to find ways to monitor the police, to help complaints, to film the police, and to educate the community as to what their rights are and how they can exert their rights in cases of police abuse, and putting a great emphasis on being able to film the police so that you could have some evidence. Because without possibly right now a film or a large amount of witnesses, it's almost impossible to get justice with the police department. And the No Cops Collective is trying to help people learn how to do that.
Mm. Is there a way to get in touch with them to schedule a Know Your Rights training?
Yeah, I'm at work right now, and I don't have that with me, Kahiji, but I definitely will get it to you, and you can maybe announce it at the next show.
Okay. I can also, I can look in an email or something, and I can find the information myself while I'm here today, and I'll get it out over the air before the day is over. But all right, I have to read some announcements, and is there any visioning? What? So that's not going to solve the problem. Can you tell us maybe what would solve the problem?
The reality is we're working in a bankrupt system, economically, politically, and socially. It was never intended to represent the majority of the people. We're living in an oligarchy, and the oligarchy has been here since the beginning. We need a new system, and it's hard for people to conceptualize, well, how are we going to get a whole new system? Well, I can only say this. If we never start, we never will get one, but this system will never work. It won't work for people of color. It won't work for poor whites. It won't work for middle-class whites. And when we can educate and organize all the forces that this system don't work for to say we need a new system, then we're on the right path.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great holiday, and I hope to have you on the show again soon.
Sounds good. Be safe.
All right. Take care.
All right.